But I thought Seth was going to steal all my thunder there for a minute, and it's ironic the way things tie in. Some of the lyrics from the hymns that James Faulkner picked out and they sang, and the topic that I'm going to cover, you know, some of you have heard me touch on these things before, and I want to tell you it's not laziness that I went back to this topic. I have known for, you know, since this time a year ago that I would probably be called on to give a message. In the last few months, I've been thinking about it and praying about it and pondering what subject would I talk about, and it truly was inspiration. This was the only thing that came back to me. And you can ask Papa Bear there, I'm never without an idea. I'm never without things to say. And I'm not afraid to take the time to prepare. So that's not it. And I just felt like this is what we needed to talk about. You know, I want to tell a real quick story first. You all know how interested I am in prophecy. And prophecy is about one-third of the Bible, and about 90% of the prophecy pertains to our last day. You know, I want to tell the story to make you understand why I'm so interested in it and why I'm so anxious about it, and then I'll go on into the body of my sermon here. But I am not afraid of the tribulation. I am not afraid of the false prophet or the beast or the Antichrist or the government. I'm not afraid of those things. I look at prophecy because Messiah told us in the book of Matthew that when we saw these things come to pass, we would know the time is near. When I was a little boy, my dad drove a 1949 Ford pickup. Now I know that some of these people in this audience are old enough to remember what a 1949 Ford pickup looked like. This was an old three-quarter ton, heavy springs, rattled and banged, and those old pickups, remember the old tailgates, used to have chains. They had a loop of chain on each side. We lived out in the country. We lived out in a little hollow, and the county road was, you know, probably 100 feet, vertical feet above where our home and our little pasture and our little mini ranch was down there. And the county road coming out there was full of washboards and potholes, and I could hear my dad's truck coming, oh, at least 2 blocks away. I could hear it rattling. I could hear those chains clanking against the back of that truck. Now, my father worked a swing shift. I went to school during the day, so I never got to see him much. Got to see him about an hour at lunchtime during the week, and that was all I saw him during the week. When I knew it was about time for my father to come home, if he'd been out somewhere and I knew it was, like in the summertime, I knew it was close to time for him to have to go to work, I'd start edging out towards the edge of the yard, out towards the driveway where the driveway ended at the yard, and I would listen. And the closer it would get, the more I'd edge over there and I'd listen. I'd get clear out by where the garage was. And the road, our driveway made a pitch up the hill and it made a sharp curve to the right onto the county road. And when I'd hear my father, when I'd hear that truck, I would start charging up that hill as fast as my little legs would carry me. I wanted to see my father. I knew he was coming home. And I was running to meet him. And he'd come around that curve and he'd see me and he'd stop that old black Ford pickup and he'd wait for me. And I'd run up that hill as fast as I could go and I'd jump on that running board on his side of the truck and hang on through the window, which he had rolled down for me so I could hang on, and I'd ride back home with him. That's why I watch prophecy. I know Messiah's coming. And I'm excited about it, and I have been excited. In fact, I'm going to tell you another quick little story. Tell you how long I'm preaching that my Messiah is coming. And some people have misunderstood. I don't want you to misunderstand. I never ever picked a date. I still don't pick a date. I won't pick a date. I've always refused. But I used to have a business. I had about 6-7 people working for me. They were a captive audience. And of course, because I was all wound up about this, they had to listen to me. For those of you who don't know, I'm a goldsmith. I'm a jeweler. So I sit at a bench in a stationary position, and that's how our work is done. So I had these guys. They had to hear it whether they wanted to or not. Now, this incident took place way back in the 80s. I came in, I had gone out to lunch one day, and I guess maybe I'd been on a particularly good rant. Didn't impress them. Didn't impress somebody. Because I came back from lunch and some wise guy had hung a sign up over my bench that looked like this. I appreciated the humor in it, and I understood what they were getting at, even though I never picked the date. But you know, we've discussed, and every speaker who's come to this podium has brought it up, why are we here? Well, you know, there are a number of reasons. There's no one simple answer, but the topic of my speech today, if I put a title to it, it's The End. Or the one I like better is The End with a question mark. Because it's not. And I'm not going to spend much time discussing the events that lead up to this. Any of you who have heard me before have heard me do that. And there's differences of opinion about the details of how it's going to happen. But we know Messiah is coming. And my brother Dale Gill, he worked on me about 3 or 4 hours the other day and couldn't teach me a thing about prophecy. Isn't that right, Dale? Couldn't teach me a thing. But we know that Messiah is coming, and a lot of the people that I knew before, in fact, there was a time, you know, I went to a Holy Roller church, and the end of the world meant one thing to me, and it's not what it means to me today. And I don't see it as an end anymore. I see it as almost a beginning. It's not the very beginning of the story, but it's not very far into it. You know, it's just a chapter or two into the novel. So some of the things that I want to touch on are things that will give us a vision, maybe expand your view of what the millennium's about. We know that this Feast of Tabernacles we're keeping in the 7 days represents the millennium. You know, 1 Corinthians 2:9 says, "But as it is written, eye hath not seen, excuse me, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love him." And I'm not pretending that I know it all. I can know some things. And the things that I know, that I can think of, that I know are going to happen are marvelous. And he says he's got so much more marvelous things that I can't even imagine them. So we're going to cover some of the things that that we know is going to happen. And those of you who have heard me touch on these things before, be patient with me. This isn't Burger King. You're going to get it my way today. We know that at the end of the millennium, we just celebrated the Feast of Trumpets and the Day of Atonement. We know that the world, this earth, this world, this culture, this the physical part of this world, is going to be left in an absolute shambles. We know that mankind is going to be mostly destroyed. There's going to be death and destruction, misery and sorrow on a scale that we can't imagine. God says that he's going to make men as rare as gold. We know that Israel, as a nation, is going to go into captivity. We know that he's going to tithe Israel. A third is going to die by this pestilence and famine. A third is going to die by warfare. And a third is going into captivity. And in several places he speaks about bringing them back out of captivity. And we'll touch on that briefly later. But the part that I'm looking forward to, and the part that we have just reached now, is in 1 Thessalonians 4. And I'm going to read that to you. This is one of my favorites. I absolutely love it because it's so inspiring. First Thessalonians 4:16. Well, let me go back up to 13 and begin there. "But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that you sorrow not even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him." You're going to hear those chains rattling on that old truck. They're going to run up that hill to meet him. They're coming back with him. And that includes you and I, too. For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not precede them which are asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with him in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we ever be with the Lord. Now, if you want to know where we're ever going to be with him, you need to turn over to the book of Zechariah. Remember, the earth is laid waste. We know that in Revelation, in the 16th chapter of Revelation, it talks about an army of 200 million men that are going to come over, dry shod across the river Euphrates, to the valley of Jezreel, on the plain of Megiddo, what we all refer to as Armageddon. We know that they're going to engage there for a battle, or encamp there for a battle against Gog and Magog and the king of the north. Now, how many are there total, I'm not sure. But I know that 200 million from the kings of the east are going to be there. It'll be a huge army of men. If I think about Mark and Terry and Paul, the ministry that they're working on to provide the support and the much needed support and services for the widows and the fatherless. And you think about this. You think that there's going to be any widows when God comes down and smites those 200 plus million men with that curse where their eyes consume away in their sockets and their tongue in their mouth and their flesh consumes away off their bones? You know, they're going to leave wives and children at home. And they're not all going to die. There are going to be human beings on this earth when Messiah comes, when we're changed in the twinkling of an eye and we meet him and we come back down. And then it says in Zechariah 14:4, it says, "And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof towards the east and towards the west, and there shall be a very great valley. And half the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. And ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azazel. Yea, ye shall flee as ye fled before the earthquakes in the day of Uzziah the king of Judah. And the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with thee." Get the picture, people. That's you and I. We're not going to be sitting in Panama City Beach, Florida. We're not going to be sitting here. This is a real deal. This is what we look forward to. This is what we live for. We're going to meet him in the clouds. We're going to be changed. And then we're coming back with him. You know, I've never been to the Mount of Olives. I'd like to see the Middle East, but I'm not going there now. I'm still flesh and blood, and that's a dangerous place. And when the time has come, he'll bring me there. There's going to be a lot of work to be done. And the millennium is not going to just be 1,000 years of party, party, party. Jeremiah, I'm not going to these places. Y'all can jot them down if you'd like and go there later. But Jeremiah 23:11, Jeremiah 16:14, Isaiah 11:11, it talks about the Israelites specifically coming back from their captivity and coming back to the model nation that God is going to create in Jerusalem. Some of those things, and this is Israel, physical Israel, that's going to be called back to Jerusalem. There's still going to be other nations. We know that from Zechariah 14 too, because over in verse 16 he talks about, "It shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." There are people who are going to be required, flesh and blood human beings, who are required to come up to the temple, to learn to keep the feasts, to learn to keep God's laws. Those of us who are called to be kings and priests, to administer the government, to administer the educational system, and the systems of worship, we are going to have people to take care of. Now, think about this. Even if he only tithes all of humanity, you know, one of these things, in my personal opinion, personally, I think that's what he's going to do. But take 10% of the people today and give them 1,000 years with no war, no famines, no genetically modified foods, nothing, no governments to slaughter them by the hundreds of thousands or millions. You produce a lot of people in 1,000 years. Now, my personal belief is, and it's a question I've discussed with people, and I don't know if there's a solid answer to it, but I believe they're going to have their force quarantined. I don't believe they're going to live that whole 1,000 years. I believe people through the millennium are going to live and die, and then I believe that they're going to come up in the great judgment, the white throne judgment, and they will either be burned up and become ashes under the feet of the saints, or they will be given eternal life. Another question I don't know for sure, and I've discussed it both ways with people, I don't know whether ultimately the human experience is going to come to an end and there won't be any human beings. I know that God says that, Seth, you referred to this, I was going to conquer death. It's going to be swallowed up. So, you know, it's possible. I'm not convinced one way or another. You know, we know that there are angels now. We know that there's God. We know that when Jesus returns, we're going to be added to the God family as children of God. We're going to be just like him. The scripture says that. It says that in the book of Revelation. When he comes back, we'll be like him because we'll see him as he is. So is there going to be another category of people who are flesh and blood that just eternally regenerate? I don't know. That's one of those things where my mind can't imagine everything that he's got planned for us. Maybe somebody does know that. Maybe somebody has got an answer that I don't have, and you can call me later. And of course, talk to Dale before you do it, because I'm kind of a tough study. But if you know these things, you know, maybe you do. Some of the things are my opinions, and some I know for sure have to be done. There are certain things that God is going to have to do for this world, because I don't believe the people can do it. And I was discussing with Charlie Kimbrough this morning some of the things that men have already done. Things like the depleted uranium that they've thrown around all over the world. That's got a half-life of something like 1 billion years, and it's poisonous, it's deadly. It's unavoidable. You know, that stuff is so deadly that those who serve in the Middle East now, those men who serve over there, or those women, can pick that stuff up through inhaling it, through the food, through the contact with skin, and they can bring it home to their spouses, and it can be, they can poison their spouses with it through sexual contact, through kissing, their spouses and their children. It's deadly, horrible stuff. Genie's already out of the bottle. Thousands of tons of it have already been used. Things like that, God's going to have to help us take care of. I think it's going to have to be done supernaturally. Things like genetic manipulation of the food. Mark and I did a series. We both read a book. He read it, recommended it to me. I read it. It scared me white. I mean, it was a horrible... you people, I really recommend you get... The title of the book is The Seeds of Deception. And then Mark and I did a series of radio programs on the irreversible corruption of the food chain, the food supply, the common foods that we eat. And once again, the only expression I can use is the genie's out of the bottle. It's done, and it's done, and it's out there. And these genetically modified organisms are cross-pollinating and polluting every source of food on the planet. And they're truly like, they're frankenfood. That's my word for it. I call it frankenfood. We have no idea what it's going to do to us in the long run. We don't know. We have no idea of how it's going to make it possible for pathogens to cross species. In fact, one of the things they're doing with food, not only are they mixing the genetics of plants with plants, they're mixing the genes of animals and insects in with plants. And those are being spread to the other plant life here. Biological warfare agents. Billions of dollars are spent in secret laboratories all over the world creating these things that they have no idea what they're going to do in the long term. They may think they have an idea, but it's just like with the genetically modified food. They don't know. Up to 90% of all the corn in the world is now polluted with genetically modified corn. In a few more years, you will not be able to buy corn, period, that is not corrupted. And I believe it's going to be that way with almost everything we eat. So those kinds of things, and the chemical agents, and the dead bodies. You know, I'll just go back and read about the tribulation. Think about 90% of the people on this globe being killed within just a short period of time. You know, when they had the trench warfare in Europe in World War I, and they just pulverized one another with cannons and shells, the flesh was just ground up into the soil. The bacteria count on those battlefields were so high in some areas that 25 and 30 years later, it was still unsafe to be there. And the results of the Great Tribulation are going to be worse than that. In short, we're going to have a mess to clean up here. And it's going to be a big mess, and God's going to have to do some of it, and I realize that. But I think that He's going to make us clean up a great deal of it ourselves. You know, when I was a kid, I went to the Holy Roller Church, and I used to hear about the end of the world, and you know, and it was the typical thing, you know, we're going to have wings, and we're going to have harps, and we're going to float on clouds, and you know, and I was just a little kid, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I used to think, that is going to be so boring. Why would you want to do that? And then they'd say, oh, well, you're going to be in the presence of the Lord, and it's going to be so glorious, and I'd say, well, I guess that's one of those adult things that I can't understand yet. But you know, we're going to have work to do, and Jesus said in John 5:17, He said, my Father works, and I work. And I'm telling you, we're going to work. I think one of the biggest reasons for the millennium is to prepare this world for the great white throne judgment, which, by the way, just happens to come after the seventh day of the feast, the very next day. There are also varying theories on that, and I've heard that the resurrection is going to be done in stages, and you know, a few here and a few there, and you know, well, I don't subscribe to that. I think that we're here to clean this place up, to do the preparatory work, to raise up billions of human beings at one time for the judgment, for the great judgment. And he's given a little thought. How many apartments are you going to have? How many pairs of pajamas and slippers are you going to have? I really don't think these people are going to come back up with their clothes on. How many eggs are we going to have to fry that first morning? Well, really, think about the logistics of it. You're going to have a lot of people to help them out. Imagine how many people are going to be freaking out. Imagine the people who died violently or in a war, you know, and they didn't know anything of the truth, and they're not looking for anything like this to happen. All of a sudden, boom, there they are, alive again, looking around. They're going to freak out. God is going to need us to administer And he's going to need the people that are born and raised and living during the millennium to help prepare the homes, the clothing, the food for that great resurrection. Some of the things that are going to be done are going to be some big changes made. And I could refer to it as these people have to learn new ways to do things, or you could say they have to learn old ways to do things. Because when God created things, when God created this world, what did he say? It was very good. When he created the herbs to eat, he said it was very good. Everything hadn't been ruined and polluted. And you know, he's coming back in the Jubilee year. It is going to be the restoration of all things. And what's he going to restore it to? Something brand new? I don't think so. I think when he made that first grain, when he made the wheat, the rice, barley, millet, whatever it was, I believe it had everything we need. I believe it was perfect food. He's going to create a perfect climate. He's going to clean up all that filth and poison, or he's going to show us how to do it, that we have destroyed this world with, and our food chain with, and our water with. We know that all the water is going to be turned to bitter, and it's going to be turned to blood. Go back and read the book of Revelations. It's got to be cleaned up. We've got to have people who've got a healthy place to live, and a happy place to live. Can I have a safe place to live, to raise their children, so that they've got sharp minds and not dull minds, so they've got healthy bodies and not sick bodies. I'm going to read Zechariah 11:23 and turn there if you'd like. No, I'm not. Because there is no 11:23. I always do that at least once every time I prepare a message. This time I'm going to look and see if it's here before I tell you which one I'm going to read. Zechariah 14:8. I talked about water. We know how important water is. Bro Bear, you talking to the children about water? Well, Zechariah 14:8, and I was just reading there a while ago, and it says, in that day, that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea and half of them toward the hinder sea. In summer and in winter it shall be. Big, huge artesian well is going to come up out of there. It's going to run towards the Dead Sea and towards the Mediterranean Sea. There are other places you can read. I didn't want to go into a lot of detail where it talks about how the sea floor is going to be lifted up and we'll have fertile soil and fresh water. You know, those who have gone through the trauma, the destruction, the worst time of trouble that there ever was and ever will be, they're going to need that water. Ezekiel 47 has something to say about water, too. I'll take a minute to read that. It's critical. I think that's one of the places where it's going to have to begin. I'll just start in verse 1. Afterward he brought me again under the door of the house, and behold, waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward, for the forefront of the house stood toward the east, and the waters came down from under the right side of the house and the south side of the altar. Then brought me he out of the way to the north gate, the gate northward, and led me about the way without the utter gate by the way that looketh eastward, and behold, there ran out waters on the right side. And when the man that had the line in his hand went forth eastward, he measured 1,000 cubits, and he brought me through the waters, and the waters were up to the ankles. Again he measured 1,000 and brought me through the waters, and the waters were up to the knees. Again he measured 1,000 and he brought me through the waters to the loins. Afterwards he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not pass over. It was the waters, for the waters were risen, waters to swim in, a river that could not be passed over. So God's going to provide sweet water for us and fresh water, clean water, so that we can have crops. He's going to take us back to the original herbs and grains and agricultural methods. The ones that he said when he saw them, it was very good. We're going to have, I believe, totally new agricultural methods from what, or totally different. Go back to the old ways. I'm not sure about all these things. He's got a way of organizing it, and I know that he's got a way of organizing it, where he knows that he's got a faithful leadership that will do as he tells us to do, whether we know it now or whether we have to learn it then. You know, when our minds are expanded, it's not going to take us long to learn. We're going to be able to pick up things real quick and understand them completely, you know, in short order. But we know that the way we do things now is so corrupted. We're going to have a new style of architecture, probably a new way of designing cities. We're going to use different building materials. If you study, in fact, I subscribed to the National Geographic, and there was an article in the last issue of National Geographic where the author had decided to investigate what kind of chemical pollution he had in his body, how long it had been there, and the sources of the pollution. So the National Geographic Society provided him with a budget, provided him with the connections to get all the testing done, to have the leading people in that science show him where they came from, the sources of all these poisonings. It's a very interesting article. But you know, an awful lot of it came out of the building materials we use, the clothing we use, the fabrics we use, the glue and the adhesives that we use to put our wallpaper on, glue our flooring down, glue our carpets down. These things constantly bleed out toxins into us. Even if you're detoxifying, you can go detoxify, move back into your home, and within a few months you need to do it again. You're breathing it. You're absorbing it by touch. Now, I'm not sure. I'm not a prophet. I can't look into my crystal ball and tell you exactly what God's got in mind for us. But I know this. Our homes are not going to poison us. Our foods are not going to poison us. So he's going to set up a system where those of us who are in the first resurrection are going to be in charge of the governments from the local level right on up to the king himself. All the patriarchs, David, Moses, Noah, the apostles, they're all going to have a place in government. There's going to be a system of education set up, and it's going to be right education. There will be no lies taught. There will be no perversions taught. People will be taught the source of everything good. They'll be taught every good way to grow food and to use food. They'll be taught what fabrics to wear on their body that are healthy, that don't interfere with their health, their physical health and their mental health. We're going to have to oversee all that. There's going to be, I don't know what, is the religious system going to be set up after the model of the synagogues? I can't say for sure. But I know this. There's going to be a temple in Jerusalem, and the king is going to be there. And during that millennium, there's going to be services there. I'm going to go back to Zechariah 14 again, and I can show you that this is going to go on during the millennium. This is also one of my favorite chapters in the Bible. In Zechariah 14:16, it says, "And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left," so there's going to be people left, "of all the nations," which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whosoever will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and even upon them shall be no rain. And you suppose they'll come when they get hungry enough? I'll bet they do. I'll bet they do. You know, I live out in the country, up in East Tennessee, south of Knoxville, outside of a little town called Maryville. I'm about 20 minutes outside of Maryville. You go out the highway, and then you turn off the highway, and about the last 2.5 miles, a little narrow country road goes up through there. You know, in that last 2.5 miles before my house, there's two churches in 2.5 miles. From the spot where you hit the highway, about the other 7.5 miles into town, I'll bet I pass within sight of at least a dozen churches. Now, in the world tomorrow, in the millennium, you see, I have to drive all the way to Knoxville. It's about 50 minutes on a good day, what it takes me to drive up there, and I couldn't tell you how many churches I drive by. But in the millennium, everybody between my house and the little church at Knoxville is not going to go to the church at Knoxville. They're going to have their little neighborhood churches. Now, I drive by those churches and I think, boy, wouldn't that be nice if we could... You know, the one is about 1/4 mile from our house. I think, wouldn't it be nice if we could just drive down there and worship with believers and hear the truth and see the, you know, see the brethren, see our neighbors, get to know our neighbors. See, we don't even know our neighbors. I mean, we know a couple of them, but, you know, all those people around us, and, you know, when what Dora and I do, when we drive by there, we say, there's the sun worshipers. We go by there on Sunday and see all those cars parked up. There's the sun worshipers. But it'd be nice to be able to stop and worship with those people and worship in truth and knowledge and to know those people. And I believe that there's going to be some system set up where God's true servants are there in those neighborhoods, and they're teaching the priesthood, and they're teaching those people the truth in their little neighborhood synagogues or churches. That's what I believe is going to happen. That's why he's going to need us. That's why he's going to need us to train those who are alive, the ones that are left, and the ones that are born after that throughout the millennium. We're going to go up. You know, I don't know. This is something that I have just pondered. I don't know that it's so. I don't know that it's not so. Maybe the whole world is going to go up to Jerusalem. Maybe there will be other feast sites where they won't go to Jerusalem. Maybe they'll go there periodically. I'm not sure. If anyone knows, catch me later and tell me. I know that they will, and I know especially at the beginning they will, because it says right there in Zechariah that they will. And if they don't, there won't be any rain on them. If there's no rain on them, there's no food in their belly. They get hungry enough, they'll get humble. Anyone here get humble on Day of Atonement? I do. I don't feel much like a fight on that day. So we have our work cut out for us. The world needs us. One of the... One of the big responsibilities, and we know about this because we have read Torah, and it's covered in Torah, and this is the distribution of land. You know that one of the most evil things in our society is the way the land is handled. It's what keeps us in slavery. It's the paying the ridiculous usury on your mortgage. It's in government and industry and dishonest, wealthy and powerful people being able to herd us around and steal our property and then to sell it back to us at usury. It's about the government being able to charge you annual rent on your own property. If you think you own that property, who's paying the king his annual rent? It's he who owns that property. About 2 or 3 years, you'll be out on your ear, and the king will sell it to the next sharecropper who comes along. And that's going to come to an end. Property is very important to God. He made the promises to the patriarchs. He made the promises to Israel. He divided the land up amongst the tribes. It's their inheritance. When he comes back, you know, and there's a big flap going on in the Middle East that's gone on for centuries. He's going to put a stop to that too. When the God of the universe, when Messiah comes down here, and he tells those people, those Philistines, what is and what is not theirs, when he tells the Jews what is and what is not theirs, when he tells the Israelites what is and what is not theirs, it's going to stick. He's going to show us how to divide that land up, give that land to the people. You know, I used to really look forward to that until it struck me one day. I'm not going to get any. I'm going to be a Levite. The Levites have no inheritance. Now I'm going to have wonderful things. He's got wonderful things in store for me. But that kind of came as a shock to me. I was looking forward to having my place that they couldn't tax and they couldn't take, and you know. But I'll tell you, here's the next best thing. I've got children that I'm going to have someday, hopefully, grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. I believe that I'm going to have a physical remnant. And whether he gives them a piece of land in East Tennessee or North Idaho or in the Holy Land, I don't know. He knows, and he's going to do it just exactly the way it ought to be done, and it's going to be theirs. Theirs. And they're going to plant their own trees and their own vines, and they're going to sit under them. They're going to build their own homes and live in them. Some lying, thieving politician is not going to come by and take it away from them. Some multi-mega millionaire who wants to develop it into waterfront condominiums for the very wealthy is not going to go get in cahoots with the filthy, rotten, thieving politicians and condemn it and steal it from you and then sell it for millions of dollars. It's going to belong to them forever. God has a way to handle these things. All those things have to be administered, and this is what we're going to do. Going to get those churches ready. Going to get those educational systems ready. We're going to build those places for all those who come up in the great resurrection. We're preparing a place to live, clothes to wear, eggs to eat. I like eggs for breakfast. That's what they're getting. I guess they could have oatmeal, but mine are getting eggs. Another thing that a couple of areas that are of import that are going to have to be totally different than what we have now. One way that I think is going to go back to the old way, because God made it for us. He designed it and created it. And that's the world of medicine and healing. And there are going to be sick people, especially that first generation or two. You see, I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't believe that Jesus is going to return and just go, whew, and make everything perfect. I don't believe it. We made that mess, we're going to clean it up. He gave us 6 days to do our labor. The seventh day, we're going to do it his way. I don't believe that he's just going to show us what he can do. He's going to show us what we can do if we obey, if we go according to his law, according to his word. I think that's what's going to convince us. Well, you know, if he does it, we can say, well, of course you can do it. You're God. You can do anything. But when he makes us do it, when he rules with that rod of iron, he says, no, you're going to do it this way. And no, you're not going to do that. You're going to do this and you're going to do that. By the time that millennium is up, we're going to say, look what we did. Look what we can do if we trust in God. If we keep God's laws, the righteous laws. They're righteous laws. They can't fail. We have to learn that lesson, and I believe that he's going to take us back to that with things like medicine and healing. He's going to say, I didn't lie to you when I told you I made those things for your healing. They will heal you. Look how sick you made yourself. Look how well you got when you just did what I told you to do. But you know, this world has made an entire industry out of death. They don't cure you. They don't intend to cure you. They intend to treat you as long, keep you sick, and treat you as long as you've got a little money. And when the money runs out, they're going to let you die. Totally evil, duplicitous, two-faced, treacherous. It will be done away. God will show us the things that will keep us healthy. He will show us the things that we need for our healing. And as he said, it was very good. Another thing that we're going to change, and I don't know how, I really can't say exactly what is going to replace it, but our modes of transportation are going to be changed. I know that, and I'll tell you why I know that. One thing, those highways are ugly. Did any of you ever look at a freeway, a super freeway, or a big, one of those big cloverleaf exchanges going into Los Angeles or New York City and say, boy, that's pretty. Look at that. Isn't that delightful? Now, I don't know what he's going to do. Maybe it's going to be teleportation, you know, beam me up, Scotty. I mean, you know, I don't know. But I know that you won't smell that stink and that pollution. You will not hear that noise. That's a form of pollution. It's hateful. It's spiteful. Do you think that God likes that cacophony, that constant racket? You think that's what we're going to have? I don't think that's what we're going to have. Not sure what we're going to have, but pretty sure what we're not going to have. If I have anything to say about it, we're not going to have it in my district. I'll buy each of you a donkey. That's good enough for Jesus. I don't know. I know that we're going to have some way to get there. We're going, you know, those people are going to Jerusalem. They're going to go up there and keep the feast. I'm not sure how they're going to get there, but I don't think we're going to have the modes of transportation we have now. They kill people. They injure and maim people. He's not going to allow it. He's going to have something better for us. And we're going to take it and we're going to like it. You know, right after the millennium and right after the white throne judgment, now this is also my belief, and if I'm incorrect in this, anybody is welcome to guide me in the right direction, but Seth, you read in Isaiah 65, and that was one of the scriptures that I have written down here. I think a lot of people misapply that. A lot of people believe that that's going to be during the millennium. And I don't think so. I think it's going to be after the millennium. But I can explain to you why I think that. It doesn't mean it's right. Let me read some things beginning in verse 17. For behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered. This is why, primarily, I think that it's after the white throne judgment. I think that we're going to live with what we've got and what we clean up and what we create. And I think we're basically going to end up with a utopia. But I believe after the great white throne judgment, this happens. We have the new heaven and the new earth. You're not going to be able to dig down and find a plastic bottle that hasn't rotted, or a piece of broken glass beer bottle, or none of those things. When God comes down and he creates it all, it's all going to melt with fervent heat, all the elements. And that's the word he uses. The elements are going to melt with fervent heat. He's going to rearrange every molecule again. He's going to take away every remembrance of that old and evil and wicked world that we created. But that's going to be after the great white throne judgment. This is a new deal. I create a new heaven and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind. But be ye glad and rejoice, for even in that which I create, for behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people. And the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. There shall be no more of this, an infant of days, or an old man that hath not fulfilled his days, for the child shall die 100 years old, but the sinner, being 100 years old, shall be accursed. And I believe that that's a reference to the white throne judgment, right there. And they shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. There's going to be a different world, a different society, a different culture. Our descendants are going to have their inheritance, and they're going to get passed on down through the family. Now, I don't know, as I said earlier in my presentation, I don't know whether there's going to come a time when there are not human beings. I know that God says he's going to conquer death. So if there are human beings, they're not going to die. They'll have to be regenerated and live on forever. And that's a possibility. I don't know one way or another. I'm inclined to think that the human experience will come to an end. And I'll tell you why. And this is just my opinion. There were 3 archangels, which were created beings. And all the angels were created beings. And God, the Creator, created these beings. How many of the archangels sinned against the Father? 1. How many of the angels, now you got 1 out of 3, of the leaders, the archangels, how many of the angels fell? 1/3. It is my belief. Now see, remember I told you the title of my message was The End, or The End? Well, you know, we're going to have an eternity. And to you and I now, 1,000 years, this millennium, seems like a long, long time. But I'm telling you, there's a purpose for it, and I believe the purpose is in preparation for the Great White Throne Judgment. And when we have the Great White Throne Judgment, we all know that God is going to save most of humanity. And we know that because he promised that we'll be like him, that these people are going to be added to his family. They're going to already be tested and tried, and he's going to know that they're going to obey and not sin. We're not going to do what Satan did and drag a third of the angels into rebellion. God's already going to, he knows that. We're going to have been tested and tried and proved. Now just think about this. Remember what I said in John 5:17 that Jesus said, my Father works and I work. And I've just given you all the reasons that I think we're going to work through the millennium, some of the work we have to do and why we have to do it. Now the millennium comes to an end. The Great White Throne Judgment is over. Is that when we get our wings and our harps and float around and do nothing for eternity? I think we're going to work. And here's what I think. Doesn't make it so, but here's what I think. I think that when God has got all these billions added to his family that he knows will not sin, God is above all things a creator. And he says we're going to be like him because we're going to see him like he is. You know, we're going to have the same exact mentality, the same exact character, the same exact power, the same exact creativity. That sounds like blasphemy to some people, but it's what he promised me in his word. He said I'm going to be like him. I believe it. The only way I'm going to be inferior is in rank, and I know it, and that's fine with me. And if it wouldn't be, then I would never be like him because he would never give me that gift, that power. And we're all going to be the same way. So, my Father works, and I work. I think that we're going to go out there for eternity, which we can't relate to, into the vastness of space, which we can't relate to at this point. And I believe that each and every one of us is going to create worlds, beings, Will we create more angels? That's what I think. I think we're going to create after ourselves, like the Father's a creator. And I think that once we get past this issue of sin, once it is played out, once it has run its course, and everybody knows. You know, I used to have a friend who used to say there's three points to knowing. There's a point where you think you know. There's a point where you know. And there's a point where you know you know. When we get to the point where we know, and we are 100% with God, I believe that that is what we're going to do for the rest of eternity. We're going to create. Our Father works, and we're going to work. And we're going to create utopian societies. We will not ever again have that experience of sin. We will not have death in the universe. And I know that's a big thing to grasp. And you know what? I think it's even greater than that. Because he said, I have not seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man conceived. But these are things that I can conceive. And I think they're viable. I'm not saying they're positive, but I think they're viable. And he has more marvelous things than that planned for us. So there you are. There's a big reason for the Feast of Tabernacles. It's the image of things to come, and it's to come soon. I believe that most of us who are sitting right here now, most of you who are hearing my voice right now, you're still going to be standing on your feet when you see him come. When that trumpet sounds, then we're all changed. I believe we're going to see it, and hopefully I've inspired you to look forward to it, the things that you're going to do.